Ladies and gentlemen,
good. Thank you.
Please welcome Billy Grammer.
Hey, thanks so much. First of all, what a privilege to be in a room filled with motivated people who are really seeking to learn, that you would come out on a January cold, rainy day. And so many of you, it really says that you're interested about personal growth and relationships. And that is a privilege to be with a motivated group of people. I love that. Thank you so much. It's an honor and privilege for me to be in the room with you and to impart some wisdom and have a few laughs maybe and learn about personal growth. Now, secondly, what a privilege to catch up with so many of you right here that I haven't seen in a while. I tell all of those people that I meet with, called my clients or my patients, whichever you prefer, that I love and dearly care about, hey, have more problems. I miss you. Because when things are going well, understandably, people aren't that motivated to come in, book an appointment, walk in, and say, hey, I'm really doing really well. I just thought I would schedule this time, catch you up, hang out with you, tell you how great my life is going, and pay you your fee to do so. So let's just hang out, Billy, for the next hour. People don't tend to do that, and I understand that. Because when they're in a situation where life is stimulating their growth, you're going to hear about the hula hoop in a minute, their hula hoop is vibrating, then they need some wisdom and guidance and some options and an understanding of what is really happening. So I meet with people and help translate all of this stimulating growth energy upward for their benefit, not around it, upward and through it to help people grow stronger. So what you're really hearing tonight is about relationship Pilates. We're going to strengthen the core inside. And that's a good thing. Now, most of you know, who am I? Great question. I'm Billy Grammer, and this is what you didn't know, and one of the reasons why I'm here tonight. 32 and a half years ago, August 10th, 1987, I began my counseling practice right outside that door in a construction trailer in that parking lot right there. Because this sanctuary, this room, had just been built and the construction trailer was still there. So Hud McWilliams, I, and Aggie Johnson began as therapists in a construction trailer on the parking lot. There was only two offices, so when both of them had clients, I had to roam around the church and find an empty office to meet in. A lot of times I met in the third grade primary room in little bitty seats that we sat down and I met my client in. So, as of today, 32 and a half years, if you total it up, this is a conservative estimate, I've met with over 50,000 one-on-one individual client hours. Now think of that, 32 and a half years sitting in an office every day, 5 days a week, 8 to 10 hours a day, 35 to 40 clients a week, one-on-one, listening and helping and encouraging. So like the Farmers Insurance commercial, I know a few things because I've seen a few things. And that's a good thing. So some basics. Our time together, 6 weeks, beginning tonight. The format, 7 to 8:30. We're going to build in a break in about 45 minutes. So don't worry. I'm not going to have you sit in your chairs the whole night and hold you captive. Hopefully at the end also, because we are such a small group, and I love speaking to small groups, it's so intimate, we're going to have maybe a little question and answer, but I want to encourage you, there are 3x5 cards in the back, and I want this class to be beneficial to you. I'm doing this for you, for your benefit, for your encouragement. If you have a situation that you just want to ask about, you don't want to do it publicly, you don't want to raise your hand, you don't want to interact, that's okay. I want you to write your question down. I promise you, I will look at it and try to address it nicely, not singling out anybody, and trying to address your concern. I want this time to be helpful to you. Now, you will notice on this slide That you don't have to really worry about content and getting every note down, because it's all recorded and I'm going to post it on a private page on my website that you only have access to. Here's how you get access to it. My website, www.billygrammerdallas.com, is my website. But to get to the private page where all of this will be posted and already is posted for tonight, except this recording, you must / type in lowercase HCF, Highland Country Fellowship, HCF. It'll take you to a page. It's going to ask you for a password. Password is HCF. There it is on the screen. You type that in, you hit return, boom. There are resources, there are chapters from books to read, there's the PowerPoint, and there are all the notes, except the notes you didn't take. They're all there. And so before each class, I'm going to post that, and tonight, after I record this, I will post it either tonight or early in the morning. You have access to everything. So that takes a little bit of stress and feeling like, well, if I miss something, how am I going to get it? Don't worry about it. Chill. We're just hanging out. It's all good. Okay? Now, here's the one thing I am going to ask of you. This is my only request. The private page on the website is for you who are attending the class. If you would, don't pass that on to everybody just because you go, hey, I'm taking this great class. Here, let me give you access to all the materials. The materials are for you who took time to attend this. That's all I'm asking. You are free to take notes. You are free to download everything. You are free to get with your friends and show them all the notes. Tell them everything you are learning. What I'm asking you not to do is to give access to the webpage. That's it. You can share everything you want to share. Do not give them access to the webpage. That's my prerogative. That is up to me to do. It's not up for you to share. It's up for you to attend because you're an attendee. You have access to it. Don't pass it on to everybody else and say, hey, go on. So I'm only asking that. I can't regulate it. I understand that. So it's an honor system. That's all I ask. Thank you very much for taking that into consideration and doing that. So I want a time for questions. That might be a little awkward, but we might try to do that. So here's my focus. Because some of you know me. What is this? There, I'm not going to hula. This thing would fall right down if I did that. Now, I want you to picture yourself, every person, because this is our focus. Inside your hula hoop, there is a fascinating world. In fact, in therapy, there is a fascinating world inside this hula hoop. But I tell you what, everybody seems to want to understand everybody else in their hula hoop. Yet therapy is about exploring why you experience something inside your own hula hoop. It's about the experience I am having in my hula hoop, the experience you are having in your own hula hoop. So if you would, imagine inside your own hula hoop, we have this wonderful brain, and in our brain we have learned patterns. We have come by these patterns honestly. Relational patterns, we have learned these in the presence of significant people in our lives. You actually have a grooved neural pathway in your brain encoded with the relational patterns you have learned in the presence of significant people. Mom, dad, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, grandparents. Those patterns are encoded, and thus the brain returns to them and repeats them. You often wonder, as my clients wonder, why am I attracted and have been attracted to the very person that I am attracted to, got married to, or am in a significant relationship with? Neuropathways. You didn't grow up in a vacuum. There's a remnant of a shadow of this pattern that your brain learned and drew you and attracted you to the very person that you wound up meeting. Now, what we're going to see even later in this class is the very person that your brain was attracted to will be the very person that stimulates your utmost growth. Now, most people, when they encounter this in my office, they say, I didn't get married for this. To which I ask them, why did you get married? The usual answer has something to do with the word needs, to get my needs met or fulfilled. I'm going to suggest during this class, you never use that word. Drop it from your vocabulary. I'll explain it later. I'm giving you a little teaser. I think the word is negative and it skews. I would prefer wishes, wants, and desires, and preferences, not needs. Relationships don't meet needs. Preferences, desires, needs are I have a need for water, air, and security. Everything else is a gift, including a relationship. We'll talk about that later. So in here, my brain, your brain, has learned patterns. These patterns have become a part of us, and we can't even distinguish them from our personality or our identity. They're so merged, we can't see them. And inside this hula hoop, I have a fascinating brain that has the ability to think thoughts. Now think of that. Thoughts are invisible. They have no shape. They have no sound. They have no color. You can't touch them, but they are as real as this podium. In fact, our brain has become so literally fused with our thinking, we can't distinguish ourself from our thoughts. We think we are our thoughts. I assure you, you are a person who has thoughts. You are not the sum total of your thoughts. You are a person, and we can push your thoughts out here and look at them, gain distance, and say, oh, my brain is unique, and I'm having these thoughts. Inside this hula hoop, it is fascinating as well. We have a set of glasses. We look through these glasses at the outside world, and we don't even realize we have a set of glasses on. We think that what we see is the actual world. We forget we're seeing the world through our glasses. Does that make sense? And when we have perceptions, we swear our perceptions are accurate. Not knowing, could we look at your set of glasses that your brain is looking through, which is unique to you, which has some sensory markers, and when data comes in, your brain translates it a certain way. It's the appearance of the thing, it's not the thing itself. To which my clients say, no, what I see is real. It is exactly the way it is. And I want to go, wait, I can get 10 other people in this room. They will see it differently than what you see it. So we're going to learn inside this hula hoop, you see what you see through a set of glasses. What if in therapy we learn to put on a different set of glasses and see it differently? To which then people say, that's a violation of my identity. My glasses and me are who I am. I'm sorry. You are a person. Your name is Terry. You have a set of glasses. It's not a violation of your identity if we put on a different set of glasses and look at it from a different angle. It's called being psychologically flexible and adaptable to have very positive relationships. We learn my set of glasses isn't exactly the way the world is. So inside this hula hoop, then when we have a set of glasses, when the data comes in and our glasses interpret it, class number three, we feel lots of emotions. We're vibrating. And then we say, you caused me to be angry. I assure you, they caused nothing. But your glasses did. And your brain, how it interpreted it, created a very powerful emotion. We're going to learn all about that. And your brain has sensitive markers on this set of glasses that when a certain thing, it comes and it's real, it triggers and it gets defensive and it reacts instantly. Boom! And my clients go, I didn't see that coming. I became a crazy person. My brain got hijacked. I was emotionally flooded. Then we're going to learn about sensitive triggers inside your brain, where you learned these triggers, because you're going to be living life and life is going to throw you a curveball. And there it is. There's that trigger. Where did that trigger come from? And lastly, inside this hula hoop, there's value, meaning, and purpose. What is your guiding North Star? What's pulling you upward through the muck and the details of this challenging world, all the way upward to where you know who you are, you know your values, and you're headed this direction all through the challenges of life? You're not going to get bogged down in the weeds. You know who you are, what you want. You know your own value system and your purpose, and you have a transcending North Star. If we address these factors in your hula hoop, we're harnessing your personal growth and we're teaching you to become a Navy SEAL in relationships. Let's do that. A Navy SEAL, flexible, battle ready, adaptable, empathetic, kind, loving, because you're living true to who you are, not what everybody else wants you to be and not what the relationship wants you to be. We'll talk more about that next week. So here we are. We're going to focus around four very clear-cut categories of your personal growth. We're going to grow a solid, flexible self. Now here's what this means. Inside your hula hoop, rooted and grounded in love, firmly balanced on your own two feet, inside your own hula hoop, you are loved. You're loved by somebody. You have worth and value. God loves you. Inside this hula hoop, we're going to grow a solid, flexible self. And next week, we're going to begin the solid, flexible self part of this class. Because when people say, I gave myself away. Have you ever heard that? I wonder what they mean. What'd they give it to? Where'd it go? Is it in that guy's backpack over there? We better go get it. Or, I lost myself. Have you ever said that or ever heard that? We're going to take a look at that next week. What that really means is they were giving, 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 giving at the expense of their own well-being and violation of their own integrity, all the way to the point that they forgot who they are and what their own purpose is. Usually this takes place in a relationship where they're so caring for the other person that they want to secure the relationship at the expense of their own integrity and their own value system. Now let me say that again. If a human being gives up themselves, violates their integrity and their core values in order to retain and keep a togetherness relationship, did you follow that? They have less of a self and less of a relationship. That's all you wind up with. Say it again. If a person gives way too much of themselves, violates their own value system and their integrity in order to secure, procure, maintain a togetherness relationship, they may attain it at the expense of themselves, and over time, they have less of a self and less of a sustainable relationship. The whole system will collapse, and what do they have left then? Answer? Nothing. Then they say, woe is me, I invested all of that and I didn't get very much back. What was I thinking? What were they thinking? Do you see what I mean? So in growing a solid, flexible self, we're next week going to look at a reflected sense of self. Where do you get yourself from? From the reflections of other people? This is called mind mapping. Do you remember RoboCop, the original, the movie? He gets all shot up. They make him into a bionic cop. Where was it filmed? Los Colinas. So when RoboCop turns on and his eyes go like this, The computer goes. It's assessing danger, friendly. It's mind mapping. It's facial mapping. Clients do this all the time, right, when they walk in my office. Couple comes in. I say, I'm so glad you're here. How could I be of help? Here's what happens. First one looks at the other. The other one looks at the other. The next one looks at the other. They're mind mapping. They're watching for cues. Then one says, you go. Then the other one says, ladies first. What's going on in that transaction? I'm not going to step out in front unless I mind map you and watch for signals in your face to know what you're thinking and saying before I say it, because if I say the wrong thing, I'm going to get a disapproving look from you. So I'm testing right now. Okay, this is exhausting. This takes up a human being so much energy. We're going to look at a reflected sense of self, borrowed functioning. Why is it that when people are in the presence of the person they want to be loved by and are in love with, they function great? When you take that person away, the functioning goes down. It's like a balloon somebody inflates, and then it goes down. Isn't that interesting? We're going to look at borrowed functioning. Then we're going to look at getting all of our validation from others rather than from inside our hula hoop and from God and our integrity. Why is it that we get all of our validation from everybody else? Couples come into my office and they say, we're having problems communicating. Okay, everybody says that. Let's work with that, right? What we find out, they're even saying, we're arguing a lot, we're fighting a lot. Listen, in therapy, I guarantee you, what we're looking at is, here's the pattern above the sea, tip of the iceberg. Here's the behaviors that I'm seeing. Underneath the ocean, there's an algorithm that's driving these behaviors up here. They could be arguing about where to go to dinner, how much money, this and that, but there's an algorithm pattern underneath that is discernible. It is learnable. So most of the time, when couples are arguing and fighting, they're fighting over who's going to validate whose reality. It's other validation dependent. So one of them looks out the window and says, it's a beautiful January day. Don't you think so, honey? The other one, refusing to validate it, says, I don't think so. Now, what does the first one do then? Let it go or speed it up? If you're a betting person, which one do you think it is? Oh, now the first one says, what do you mean? Look out the window. The sun is shining. The second one, realizing now they don't want to be subject to a dictator and the tyranny of a dictator, folds their arms and says, well, it depends on what you mean by good. Oh, laying out on them. Now the other one, desperate for validation, says, I don't know how you can sit there and say that. Any normal human being would look out the window and say, it's a beautiful day. What is wrong with you? Now see, the first one is desperate to get the other person to say, you're right, honey. Look, it's okay to have somebody's validation. It's not okay to be dependent on it. If somebody's not going to validate, you go, I still think it's a beautiful day. That would solve that argument, but I guarantee you, they will go at it for 30 minutes. Refusing. So it's a little power struggle. I'm not going to give up until I can get you to nod your head. Nod your head. The other one says, you're not going to get me to nod my head. Oh, game on. Hit me with the left, I'm going to hit you with the right. Do you see how that is? Then we're going to talk about how other validation dependency leads to gaslighting. That's when a person makes you doubt your own reality. That's very powerful. And then we're going to talk about the concept of boundaries. It's a nice concept. 90% of the people, at least, use it inappropriately. They use the concept to change everybody else. Isn't that nifty? We're so creative with the motives in our heart. A person goes, "You're not going to talk to me like that. I have boundaries." I have yet in my office seen the other person respond with, "Oh, dear Lord, you have boundaries. I will certainly not talk to you like that. What was I thinking? My gosh, I need to respect your boundaries." What do you think the other person does if the first person says, "You're not going to talk to me that way. I have boundaries"? What does the other person do? They escalate. "Really? I'll talk to you any way I want to talk to you. What are you going to do?" That's what they do. Sorry for being so loud. I didn't mean to say that loud. That's what they do. You draw a boundary with somebody, game on. Because you're trying to change them. It's okay to have a boundary as long as it's your boundary. Why do you got to announce it? We're going to look at that next week. Okay? The second one is we're going to learn to manage the emotional system. What creates your emotions? We're going to learn all about that. I know we're taught to think, you know, that guy who cut me off on Central Expressway, he's the one who caused me to be angry. I doubt that. You are angry. I don't know that he caused it. But we like to be creative and say, blame shift and justify, you know, that person did it. They're to blame. I don't think they are. So we're going to check that out. Why do people in relationships want to share their feelings? We're going to look at that. It's not a bad thing, but we need to be honest about it. It's to influence and change other people. That's why human beings share their feelings. Let me tell you what I'm feeling. Okay. I'm interested, what do you want me to do after I understand what you're feeling? Because there's got to be something that you want me to do if you're sharing a feeling. I guarantee you there's something. So we're going to look at that. And how is it as an adult we can fully have our emotions without our emotions having us? Really, you can fully feel and not have emotionally driven behaviors. What a concept. It's called maturity. What a concept. Oh, come on, if you're at your job and you're mad at your boss, do you go in and go, "Frankly, let me tell you how angry and upset I am at you because these are my feelings"? Do you do that? At work. But you're feeling it, right? So you learn to socially appropriately present yourself even though you're fully feeling a bunch of emotions. You know when people get married, they throw that away. Do you know that? They have a license just to, "I got married, I'm fully feeling it, and you're going to hear about it." Why? Because you're to blame, and I'm not putting up with this. It's interesting. Then we're going to learn to control our reactivity. We're going to learn triggers. And what you do when you become a crazy person and your amygdala takes over in fight or flight. And what triggers you. And how long does it take you to self-soothe and get back down to baseline? Some people, they stay up here for a long time. Others come down to the baseline really quickly. Then we're going to learn to find the value. What do I mean by that? Do you know, in my 32 and a half years, going on 33 years of meeting with human beings, I have never, ever encountered a human being who made substantial, lasting changes only if that person found the personal value in doing so. It's got to be meaningful to that person. Any person who makes changes has to have a reason inside themselves to make those changes. They didn't make those changes because you threw a fit and threatened to shoot a hostage. "I'll shoot a hostage." You need to make some changes. They don't make it for God. They don't make changes for others. They make it when it makes sense to them, and they have to find the value. Now, you can promote the value to them. "I want you to change." I don't know if that's a big enough value that they're going to change. I really don't. That person has to find the value in them. Now, if you want to promote the value in them, good luck. I'll teach you how to do that the best way. But how many of you have children? Do you try to promote the value to them of what you want them to do? Is it working? Most of the time it doesn't. They go, "I got it." "No, Dad. No one here." Your growing up son or daughter has to find a personal value in them that you want them to find. But you can promote it, but they have to find it inside them for them. When they do, they'll make changes. Right? So we're going to learn about how to find the value. Now, when we work these four, the fifth is a result. And I'll explain it throughout the class because you won't get it right now. You'll increase personal desire and the zest for living life. Because you've got a solid, flexible self. You're managing your emotions wonderfully in your hula hoop. You're controlling your impulses and responding wonderfully. You're finding the value of who you are and why you're living your life. And now you want to take on some adventures. That's where I want to get you. That's the purpose of this. Make sense? I'm laying the foundation. Thanks for being patient. Now, I miss this guy. So I want you to take 30 seconds. I've hit you with a lot. Take 30 seconds for a moment. Be rooted and grounded right now in your own hula hoop. Rooted and grounded in your own hula hoop. You're loved. You're a person. And listen to 30 seconds of Tom Petty. So what'd Tom say? You couldn't hear it. It's too muddled? It's wake-up time. It's time to open up your eyes. Time to rise and shine. Because it's wake-up time. Time to open up your eyes. Rise and shine. This is the excitement of personal growth. There's nothing like it. One of my major points tonight that I'm getting to in just a moment. The greatest satisfaction is the satisfaction of your own personal growth. And living courageously by your integrity, no matter how people treat you. The greatest satisfaction is not the relationship. We're making a shift. We're making a shift. Notice, this is entitled A Personal Growth Approach, Making a Shift in How You Think About Relationships. Tonight, we're making a shift. I'm laying the foundation. It's a brand new way to think. So foreign to your brain, you haven't naturally thought of it before. You notice, the title of this class is not Relationship Matters, How to Influence, Teach, Correct, Control, Change Your Spouse, Partner, Significant Other, Family Member, Friend, Boss, Co-worker, or Salesperson at Dillard's, to get them to be who you want them to be so you can be happy. That is not the title of this class, nor is it the focus, because that will never work. This is not about how to influence and change others, but let me be real clear. I'm going to hedge all of us this way towards personal growth, personal responsibility, increased self-awareness, and humility. Let me go over that again. I'm going to hedge everybody in their hula hoop this way. Increased self-awareness. Who are you? What's going on in your hula hoop? Increased personal responsibility, no more rationalizing, minimizing, blame shifting, excusing your behavior, and self-justifying, none of that, and increase your humility. I'm going to hedge you this way. You know why? Because theology tells us we're hedged the other way. To blame shift, self-justify, minimize, excuse our behavior, and rationalize it. We're going to hedge you this way. If I hedge you this way first, lean you this way first, I'll teach you how to influence others and get the best out of your spouse. I just don't want you to start there. That's where everybody starts. Make sense? I'll teach you how to influence and impact lives to get the best out of them, of the person you're in a relationship with. But you can't start there because they feel it and they'll resist you. People are smart. Even if you say, I just care about you. They're on to you. They go, I know you're caring about me because you really care about you. You want me to make the changes you want me to make because you're irritated with me. So your solution is to change me. They're on to us. So this is not, and it's also not, how to get others to listen to you, understand you, validate you, empathize with you, so that they will cooperate with you and do what you want them to do. Which most clients call good communication. When people say, we're not communicating, most of the time what they're saying is, you're not hearing me. What they really are saying is, if I can get you to understand me, nod your head, are you understanding me? If I can get you to validate what I'm saying, can you validate what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Can you empathize with the position I am in? Yes, I can. I want you to do all that, empathize, understand, and get me so that you will cooperate with the agenda of doing what I want you to do. Now, when you do that, we're communicating. You're hearing me. Well, what if I was hearing you all along? I'm just not going to do what you want me to do. We're not communicating. You're not getting it. No, I think I'm really getting it. And I am hearing you. I do have my own perspective. No, you're not hearing me. Let's go over this again. So human beings then continue to verbalize and talk it to death. Why are they talking it to death? Because the first attempt didn't work. So if I can keep, like a telemarketer on the phone, if I can keep the sales, if I can keep my potential customer on the phone, I'm going to get the agenda to get them to buy my product. That's what many people do. This is not about that. This is not about how to focus more on others, point out their blind spots, confront them more, pray for them more, think about them more so that they will finally get it and change. Because Lord knows it seems I'm the only one who really cares about this relationship. I'm the one thinking about it all the time. You're not thinking about it at all. So I have to think three times more than you. Does not anybody care? Huh. Do you get that? It's very human. It just doesn't work. We'll talk about that next week. But here's what it is about. How to harness your personal growth in order to be the very best person you can be, to have the very best relationship possible in real life, not in your head, not a fantasy, no matter what your spouse, partner, significant other, family member, friend, boss, co-worker, or salesperson at dealer decides to be and decides to do, whether they cooperate with you or not. I hope they do, but I do know this. If you become the very best person you can be, you increase your chances that they will find the value of being the very very best person they can be. If you become a worse person than you can be, I guarantee you, why would they become a good person? When they sense you don't care, they won't care. Now we're in a negative reciprocity downward spiral, and I need somebody to care. Right? Now the goal is to help you become a better person so you can have the best relationship possible. Not how to have a better relationship so you can become a better person. Got that? The goal, how to become a best, better, awesome, incredible human being so you can have the best relationship possible. Not, how do I get you to have the best relationship possible so you become a better human being? Okay. Let's do this one, and then we'll take a break. Now, throughout these classes, I'm going to throw at you different principles, along with the topic that we're on. Next week, we talk about growing a solid self. And throughout that, I'm going to throw in some random principles. They don't have anything directly to do with the topic. They're just principles I've learned throughout life, and some of my clients call them Billyisms. Let's just call them principles. Truisms. Here's principle number one. Your primary happiness, your source of satisfaction, primary, comes from being the very best person you can be and courageously taking on your journey of growth, looking at yourself inside your hula hoop, exploring, realizing your flaws, owning your imperfections, courageously holding to your values to be the wonderful, best, awesome, incredible person that you can be. Honest, realistic, humble, authentic. The very best source of satisfaction comes from that. It's the primary source. Now, the secondary source is the relationship. All human beings want to flip that. Let me say that again. All human beings want the very best relationship first so they can become a really great human being because they feel fulfilled. That's called borrowed functioning. I'm borrowing my functioning from you and you keep supplying it, I'll be a great person because you're inflating my balloon. But when you go away and my balloon deflates, I become a yucky person. No. The very best source of satisfaction is knowing you're living the life true to your values and being a loving, empathetic, kind, understanding, patient, tolerant human being. And any challenge that gets in your way on that journey, you're going to tackle it and learn about yourself. You're not going to blame the other person. Your primary source of happiness is not the relationship and what you're getting out of it, but who you are in it and what you're contributing to it. That's a huge shift. That is a lightning bolt shift. But it makes a huge difference. I will get you great relationships if you will just make this shift. I will increase your percentages out the yazoo of having fabulous friends and wonderful people who love you if you will make this shift and make this your starting point. This is a major shift. The primary source of satisfaction, happiness, is your own knowledge of yourself, your courageous choices, and acting courageously within your value system to be the person you're designed to be with integrity, wisdom, and love. Nobody can rob you of that. Now briefly, because we're going to take a break. 5 minutes. Almost done. My sweet wife is here, Sally. Wave. Good. And my beautiful daughter, oldest daughter, firstborn, Lauren. And her wonderful husband, Ken. We have a son-in-law as of a year ago. Greatest addition to our family, right there. Couldn't ask for a better guy to be involved with our family. When our oldest daughter was little, and we would go to Six Flags. Sorry, Lauren. We would teach all of our kids to ride rides at Six Flags. Because we wanted them to be courageous and learn to ride rides. And to master themselves at their pace with our encouragement. So Lauren, you must have been at least six years old. Now we had already helped encourage Lauren riding the mini mine train. And she'd go, no hands, right? Now it's scary at first, isn't it? Scary. But with several times around, Lauren learned to courageously master herself and her fear on the ride. Does that make sense? You have to get used to the ride and you have to be exposed to the stimulus. Make sense? You're not going to learn to ride the mini mind train and conquer your fears watching other people do it. So Lauren would get on, and after the fourth or fifth time around, you go no hands. You follow me? Because you've mastered yourself enough and your fear and terror, and the ride is the vehicle where you're learning to master yourself. Got that? Now, once you master yourself, and it started out in uncomfortable fear, anxiety, and worry, then by the fifth time around on the roller coaster, you grow acclimated to it, right? Then by the seventh time, when you go extra, extra challenging, no hands, what happens after that when you continue to ride the mini mind train? Does it bring excitement or boredom? What was that? Ah. So it wasn't the ride that was producing the satisfaction, was it? The ride was the vehicle. What was producing the greatest thrill and enjoyment? Mastering self and using the ride to do it. So Lauren would master the mini mind train, then we go to the mind train. A little bit tougher, same process. When she grew bored with that, we went across near the pond to the Judge Roy Scream. You know the white roller coaster with a legitimate big hill? Got it? Legitimate big hill. It goes click, 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 click. And what's it do when it gets to the top? Silence. So when Lauren was ready, I said, let's go do it. She said, let's still do it. We got to the top of the hill and I said, it's going to get real quiet. When we go down, lean forward and ride the ride. Do not push back. Lean forward, scream, ride the ride. Go with the ride. She did. We finished. She goes, let's go again. So then we did the double backed it loop-de-loop. You know that one? The blue one? And I said, once we hit this, throw your head back like you're doing a backflip. Watch it go. Go. Go with it. Don't resist it. Go with it. Don't resist it. Ride the ride. Five times of that, you're bored. Now we're going to the Texas Giant. No, we went to Batman with your feet dangling. Then we went to the Texas Giant. Rickety, 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 rickety. Then when they built the Titan, we went to the Titan. All of our kids were riding rides courageously because they learned to master themselves on the ride. So when she was six, when we were doing mini mind train, she wanted to do the elevator drop. Huh? Cliffhanger. Same thing. So you go up, right? You're standing on a platform. You never know when it's going to drop, right? So we're standing in line. She's 6 years old. She barely meets the top, you know, requirement. Grown adults are looking, going, they're looking at me, looking at her, looking at me, looking at her. They finally go, are you riding? Remember that? And you said, oh, yeah. Now, here's the point. Relationships provide us the same opportunity. It's not the source of satisfaction. It's the stimulus for growth. If we courageously take ourselves on with people that we meet, even challenging people, we learn to master ourselves in the nature of the challenge, and it produces great satisfaction. But we have to feel uncomfortable first, get used to the stimulus, master ourselves, go no hands, and now it's boring. So when couples are fighting massively in my office, it used to scare me to death. Now, it's entertainment. I'm kind of bored looking at my watch. Y'all go ahead. Because when I try to interrupt it, they go, stop it. Okay. I'm going to Could I intervene? No! I'm in the middle. So they're going at it for 30 minutes nonstop. Nobody's going to break in and intervene. So I'm like, okay, let me pick up my phone. Looks like I got new messages. Okay, y'all go ahead. Let me know when you're done. It used to scare me to death before. It's like, I got this. You know, people with personality disorders, which I'll talk a little bit about later, unique population, used to scare me to death. Now I find it fascinating. It's like, ooh, this is going to be a ride. So here's the point. Look at this quote. People are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Well, forgive them anyway. If you're kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you're successful, you'll win some unfaithful friends and some genuine enemies. Rise up and succeed anyway. If you're honest and sincere, people may deceive you. What's it to you? Be honest and sincere anyway. When you spend years creating, others could destroy overnight what you create. You know what? Is that going to stop you? This is the ride. Create anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, some may be jealous. What's it to you? Be happy anyway. The good you do today will often be forgotten. Is that going to stop you? Be good anyway. Do good anyway. Give the best you have and it may never be enough. What are you going to do? Sit down and say, I quit? No, give your best anyway. Because in the final analysis, it's between you and God, or if you prefer, you and your integrity and your value system. It was never between you and them anyway. Was it? No. Now, it's attributed to Mother Teresa. We have no guarantee that it is Mother Teresa. But it was on a sign in Calcutta in one of the orphanages. All right, last. I won't worry with this slide. I won't worry with that. Okay, don't worry. It's all on the website. Don't panic. Don't panic. Don't panic. Don't panic. You're fine. Breathe, everybody. Oh, you rule-bound rule keepers, I just destroyed your universe. So here we are. We're going to take a break, but I want you to take a lesson from a little girl trying to undo her seatbelt.
Why about yourself? Why about yourself?
Can I help?
No. I help. I don't. You can help when we're out to eat, okay? You can help when we are out to eat.
Okay. Do you have booster seats?
Probably. You want me to help, Rose?
No. Thank you. No, thank you.
What do you want me to do?
What about yourself?
Don't
What about yourself? I'll do this one too. I'm gonna do that. You drive! What about yourself? Go drive!
Okay. Shows you how bad my eyesight is. Gotta go back. Okay, principle number two. Thank you. Good break. And remember, we're going to end on time at 8:30. I like being punctual. You're so nice to come out on a Wednesday evening. Principle number two. Principle number two. You kind of get it. Work on yourself first as a priority sequence in your relationship to create a better relationship. Now, as I said earlier, if you will do this first diligently, I will, with wisdom, help you understand how to most effectively influence your spouse, partner, coworker, boss in the best way possible to influence change in them. Influence. Now, I know people say, as we do, many half-truths. Statements that have truth in them but are half true. Here's one. Well, you know, you can't change anybody but yourself. Okay. Just as in Princess Bride, when Miracle Max says, "Hoo hoo hoo, look who's so mad, not so much," it happens to be that your friend here is mostly dead. There's a difference between being mostly dead and all dead. Because Mandy Potemkin said, "He's dead. Hoo hoo hoo, look who knows so much." Well, when you say a statement, after all, you can only change yourself. You can't change anybody else. Well, that's a half-truth. I guarantee you, in a relationship system, if you effectively, positively, constructively change, you're going to have an impact on the other person in your relationship system. You will impact them. You will have an influence on them. If you act negatively and badly, you will influence them to act negatively and badly. So when people say, "Well, you can't change anybody but yourself," yes, you can. You can influence human beings by your own behaviors. Happens all the time in my office. Don't you think? It's what I get paid for. I'm helping people make changes. How I am with them helps aid the change process. So, I'm going to help you learn to impact those people that you love to get the positive changes that you hope to see in them. I didn't say you would. I'm going to maximize your potential by being first the best person you can be. And also, think about this, just for a moment, just because it's life. Now, when people come in and I say, "I'm so glad you're here. How could I be of help?" It's understandable that somebody's going to say, "We're here to work on our relationship." Now be smart and put your thinking cap on just for a moment. Those are the outside words that your ears hear. We're here, notice the "we," we're here to work on our, notice plural, relationship. Can you give me the communication that's going on underneath that statement? Now, what's really being said? Yes, I'm here to work on the other person because I don't like what they're doing and what I'm not getting out of this relationship. And therapist, I'm bringing them to therapy because we both know they have a problem. Lord knows I've tried to persuade them. I'm going to bring them into your office so it's going to be two against one so you can influence and change them in ways that I can't because I'm sick and doggone tired about what I'm not getting out of this relationship. So we are here to work on this other person. Are we clear? Now the other person is watching really carefully. We're here because the first person to speak that sentence, when they both go through the awkward silence of, "You go. No, you go. I want to hear why you think we're here. Why do you think we are here?" Now the other one says, "I'm not saying." So finally, the motivated one says, "We're here to work on our relationship." Now the other person's watching me going, "Is this going to be 2-on-1 in your office? How's this really going down?" So we have to understand human beings are very crafty, and even if they use I statements, "I am feeling this way," what they really mean is, "You're causing me to feel it." Human beings are very creative with language. So when people say, "We are here to work on a relationship," most of the time, it means, "I'm focused on the other person, and I need to see changes in them." Of course, the other person's thinking the same thing about the other person. It's a standoff. So you can work on yourself while you are in a relationship, as you relate to them. So the best way to change your relationship is change yourself and your position in the relationship. Watch what the other person does. This is why I tell people, if you want to see changes in your relationship, don't simply keep appealing to your partner, "Hey, we have to both go to therapy." What if the other person says, "I just don't have time"? What does the first person usually say back? when the other person says, well, I'm just too busy, I don't have time. Yes, they start using statements to motivate the other person.
Obviously, you don't care about our relationship. I'm the only one who does. Lord knows, I have been trying to do this and improve it, and you've been stonewalling me.
As if that's going to be motivating to the other person who rises up and says, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. I had no idea. Absolutely, I will go with you. Forgive me. Thank you for being the Holy Spirit in my life. Convicting me of sin, wrongdoing, errors, imperfections. Thanks for holding that. I don't know what I would do without you. That's not what people do. They fight back. So the normal approach says, you know, we both have to cooperate to have a good relationship. No, we don't. Once you make that statement, you're giving power to the other person to stonewall you. I'm serious. You don't get cooperation that way. That's going to be another principle. You can't get outcomes by focusing on outcomes. Outcomes are a byproduct of other factors. If you're not getting an outcome, let's look at the factors that are not producing the outcome you want. You can't keep saying, you need to cooperate with me. You're not going to get it. In order for a relationship to improve, I need you to come to therapy with me. We both have to invest in making this better. No, you don't. It's ideal. I hope that happens. It's not necessary. It is not necessary. It's ideal. It's not necessary. I have to get you to listen to me, understand me, validate me, so you'll cooperate and do what I want you to do. Good communication. I got to get you to listen to me, understand me, and validate me because you're the source of my own validation. You're the only one who can tell me I'm okay. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Principle number 3. The more you need, demand, require, cajole, bind, and nag a person to do something you want them to do, the less motivation they will have to do it. Really? I need you to go to Lowe's with me. I need you to. I can't go unless you go. I am requiring you to go to Lowe's with me. Not too many people can find the motivation to go, oh my gosh, because you need me to, I will rise up to the occasion. I am here to meet all of your needs. It's why I exist. How dare me from thwarting your personal needs? You must be frustrated. I love you so much, I will meet your every need and requirement and demand. That's not true. So the more you want your teenager, need, require, and demand them to do it, I don't know that they're going to find the motivation to do it. The more you do it with your young adult, child, son, daughter, the less room they have inside them to find their own motivation because they know what you want them to do, right? So this sets in motion a high desire, high motivation, less motivation dynamic. One person is highly motivated and desirous. The other one has less motivation and desire. Listen, who's in the controlling position? Always the less desirable, the less motivated is in the controlling position, and the high motivation, high desire, how do they respond to the less motivated? What do they try to do? Motivate them. Oh, isn't that brilliant? We already have a less desire, less motivated person who can't find the personal desire to do what you want them to do. So it's 51-49, 70-30, 80-20, a gap. Now this one has already said, I really don't want to go to Papacito's and eat Mexican food. I've had it 6 times this week. And it's really not healthy, and I'm tired of it. Now the other one says, but I really want to go. We'll have a great time. And I want to go with you, and we'll sit on the patio at 3 bowls of chips because they keep bringing them. Right? They keep bringing them, so we keep eating them. We'll have a great time. Now the high motivated tries to sell the low motivated on the agenda they want them to have. Now the less motivated is smart and feels the bind. Feels it? They feel the energy bind. I know what you want me to do. It just hasn't caught up in me yet. So the more a person feels the bind of what you want them to do, do normal people just collapse, give up their agenda, and go, I don't know what I was thinking. Sure, I'll go to Papacito's with you. Do they do that? No, when normal people feel a bind and they feel the energy and they feel your agenda, they take a step back, right? They push back against the tyranny of dictatorship. You're not going to rob me of my choices. I'm sorry, honey. I thought your choices were the same as mine. Oh, this is why I have to run my clients. Note to self, you did not marry you. You might want to put a 3x5 card. I did not marry me. I married not me. You're so not me. Are you just waking that up after 35 years of being together? You're so not me. I thought you would want exactly what I wanted you to want when I want you to want it. No, honey, when you do that, it kills all my desire and motivation to have my own desire and my own motivation. Make sense? So now the high motivation is frustrated by the low desire. So the high motivation tries to motivate the low desire out of their low desire. This is like teaching a pig to sing. It's a colossal waste of time and it's irritating to the pig. Pig doesn't want to sing. The low motivation, low desire doesn't and isn't motivated. And when people try to motivate that person to get motivated, they push back even more and they have less motivation than they did when they started with. Right? Happens every day in my office. Now the high motivated feels tethered and says, I can't do this without you. And now the high motivated is frustrated. Please, all I'm going to say is, if you want to promote something to a human being, use this phrase. Honey, would you please consider? And then fill in the blank. Would you just consider going to Lowe's with me? Kind of really want you to. Would you consider it? Give people options and freedom to find their own value of why they would want to go to Lowe's with you. Just because you want them to is not a high enough value. Just because they're making you upset is not a high enough value for people to decide to go to Lowe's with you. So when your first attempt doesn't work and you start using negatives, you're in trouble. Make sense? You got to let people find the value. And we're going to end with this because it's too good not to. We're going to skip that one. Principle number 4. We're going to end with this because I want to be as practical as I can, and I'm very abstract. I love ideas. Ideas change my life. But other people need concrete, and I get that. So I'm trying to be as practical as I can with abstract concepts and give you something to take home. Principle number 4. Stop using negative emotions, negative words, negative behaviors to try to positively motivate your spouse, significant other, relative, friend, to make positive changes, changes you want them to make. Go over that again. Stop using negative words, negative emotions, and negative behaviors to try to positively motivate another human being. Use positives to get positives. If you're going to throw a tantrum, fold your arms, stand and protest.
I protest.
Your protest isn't going to change the universe.
I'm feeling negative. And it's your fault.
Look, using negative protest and negative behaviors doesn't change human beings for the good. They might comply with you temporarily because you're throwing a temper tantrum in Target. But one day they won't. They won't. They're tired of being taken hostage. They're tired of your negative emotions. They're going to look right at you and say, I really don't care. I don't care about your negative emotions. Use, honey, would you consider? Now get this. Here's what you got to remember. Oh, I'm almost there. Here's what you got to consider. Negative words and positive words do not have equal value. Do you know that? One negative word can negate at least 5 to 7 to 10 positives. Do you get that? This is why people resort to negative so quickly. It gets an instant impact in a human being's life. You can do a great job and get 7 compliments and 1 person give you criticism. Which one are you thinking about? Oh, the criticism is worrying you because it's a threat to the living organism. It's a threat inside the hula hoop. Oh, I loved the positive affirmation. The one threat that came into the survival mechanism, the inside concept goes, what is that? And it's all over it. One negative. So you've got to remember in conversation, negatives and positives do not have equal power. Because biology's concern is survival, and it's very concerned about anything that's a threat to survival. And negatives are designed to get instant attention and reaction. Oh, you got it. I don't think it's going to produce lasting change. You made your impact, but here's what usually happens to normal human beings. When one person is receiving a negative, they don't relax, control themselves, listen empathetically to what's going on beneath, show discipline and self-control and say, I think I understand what you're saying, even though you're trying to express it negative. Look, I want to train you to be that way. Normal human beings, when you use a negative, what do? Instantly. They counter-use a negative against you. You prosecute them, they'll prosecute you. You find a fault with them, they'll instantly find a counter-fault with you. You use a negative, they'll use a counter-negative because they feel a threat inside. So this is why it is more difficult to change an argument into a good discussion dialogue than it is to change a discussion into an argument. A good discussion can instantly turn into an argument when a negative is introduced. Instantly. But it's hard to turn a negative argument into a good dialogue where two people can be heard. You know why? Because it takes discipline and self-control to use positives, and human beings don't want to do it. They want to be negative instantly. So they cut their nose off to spite their face. I'll use a negative if I want a negative because I get a reaction out of you. But it's not positive. It's not leading to a positive relationship. But by golly, I have a right to do it. Okay, stand up and prosecute your spouse. Go ahead. Prosecute your friend. They're going to call their expert witness afterwards. And by the way, don't turn to them later and go, you know, I really care about you. You want to go do lunch? You just prosecuted them. You found everything negative wrong with them. They don't want to go to lunch with you. Fighting and arguing are easy. Constructive dialogue and positive conversations take discipline and self-control and patience. Human beings don't want to do it. So they fight and argue because it's easier. And they feel justified. Negative communication is designed to poke and get a response, get somebody's attention and get them to react. But this invites negative reciprocity, and we're going to go over this in our reaction session because now we got negative reciprocity. You hit me, I hit you. You hit me at a level 5, I'm going to hit you at a level 6. You hit me at a level 6, I'm going to counter with a level 7. And so it keeps escalating. Human beings will naturally escalate. So be patient. Use positives to get a positive. And I must show you this.
Is this thing right on for an argument?
I've told you once.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
When?
Just now.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
I'm telling you, I did.
You did not.
Oh, I'm sorry, is this a 5-minute argument or the full half hour?
Oh, just the 5-minute one.
Fine. Thank you. Anyway, I did.
You most certainly did not.
Now, let's get one thing quite clear. I most definitely told you.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, this isn't an argument.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's just contradiction.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
It is not.
It is. You just contradicted me.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you did.
No, 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 no.
You did, just
no,
then.
No, no, nonsense.
Oh, look, this is futile.
No, it isn't.
I came here for a good argument.
No, you didn't. You came here for an argument.
Well, an argument's not the same as contradiction.
Can be.
No, it can't. An argument's a collective series of statements to establish a definite proposition.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. It isn't just contradiction.
Look, if I argue with you, I must take up a contrary position.
But it isn't just saying no, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. Argument's an intellectual process. Contradiction is just the automatic gainsaying of anything the other person says.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Not at all.
No, look, I...
Thank you. Morning.
What?
That's it. Morning.
But I was just getting interested.
Sorry, the 5 minutes is up.
That was never 5 minutes just now.
I'm afraid it was.
No, it wasn't.
Sorry, I'm not allowed to argue anymore.
What?
If you want me to go on arguing, you'll have to pay for another 5 minutes.
But that was never 5 minutes just now. Oh, come on. This is ridiculous.
I'm very sorry, but I told you I'm not allowed to argue unless you pay.
Oh, all right. There you are.
Thank you.
Well?
Well, what?
That was never 5 minutes just now.
I told you I'm not allowed to argue unless you pay.
I just paid.
No, you didn't.
I did! I did! No, I don't want to argue about that.
Well, I'm very sorry, but you didn't pay.
Aha! Well, if I didn't pay, why are you arguing? Gotcha.
No, you haven't.
Is that? If you're arguing, I must have paid.
Not necessarily. I could be arguing in my spare time.
I've had enough of this.
No, you haven't.
Oh, shut up.
So he's there to buy an argument. To keep arguing, you got to pay. He paid him. He says, well, you didn't pay me. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. I could be arguing in my spare time. Now, couples will go through this in my office for 30 to 45 minutes. Each in a tug of war to get the other to admit their position, and they do it by using negatives, which escalate everything. My one takeaway for you tonight, please stop using negative words, negative behaviors, negative emotions to try to get the person that you're in a relationship with to find positive ways to change their life. It's upside down and backwards. It doesn't work. Lastly, and we're going to end with this.
Well, let's go, Catherine. I'm going to say two words to you right now. I want you to listen to them very, very carefully. Then I want you to take them out of the office with you and incorporate them into your life.
Well, shall I write them down?
Well, if it makes you comfortable, it's just two words. We find most people can remember them.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, here they are. Stop it!
I'm sorry?
Stop it!
Stop it?
Yes. S-T-O-P, new word, I-T.
He's a therapist. She has claustrophobia. He has two words of advice. Stop it. We end on stop it. Don't use negatives to get a positive. I'll see you next week. If you haven't given me an email and you haven't registered, please write it down in the back because I can send you stuff. I need you to register. See you next week. We're going to talk about growing a solid self. See you.